Welcome back. Bash University Live. Thanks for staying with us, guys. Thanks for being with us. And, you know, normally we get to the questions right out of the gate. We love to talk to you guys, everybody that's our Bash University TV family. And but our guys needed to get on the road, and Dee needed to get to sleep.
Yeah.
As he is overseas. And we're here to take your questions. We're talking about largemouth versus smallmouth, or whatever you guys want to talk about. And there's a backlog of questions, Riz, and we're going to let you kick us off. What are we going to be talking about?
GDP, we're talking to you.
All right, man.
Brandon Spaulding, a.k.a. Showtime 99, wants to know, GDP, when you're fishing a jerkbait, which style Hayabusa treble hooks do you like to throw, round bends or EWGs?
Well, so kind of my thing on a jerkbait, and this is for the fall fishing or just in general?
It wasn't specific, but we're moving into fall, so let's go with the fall.
Well, let me just say this about a jerkbait. I do throw it, but I generally throw it for one reason, and it's because, number one, if the fishing's really tough, I throw it. But the one thing that I do with my jerkbait, my hooks on my jerkbait are so oversized, it looks stupid. Because,
really?
Yeah, because a lot of times when I'm jerkbait fishing, unless it's like extremely cold, you know, I kind of bypass that. But most of the time when I'm throwing a jerkbait in the fall or the spring, I am ripping it. So a lot of them fish that I'm ripping it through or getting to react to it, on a normal size, like just say a number four hook on a normal size jerkbait, isn't enough hook to give me great hookup percentages. So when I go, I'll throw a jerkbait, like just a normal, let's say a 110, you know, just a normal size jerkbait. There's some times, and I'll put a number one hook on that, like an EWG number one. I mean, it looks ridiculous, but you're ripping the bait. It's not so much that you got to get the presence to look right. It's just, I'm getting that bait to rip so hard that they're just seeing, that's all they're seeing. So the oversized hooks, I don't care if they're smacking it, I'm getting them.
Mm. Wow.
I do it a lot. So hook size for me has always been stupid big. And the same for crankbaits. Big crankbaits just go for giant hooks. You know, if you're fishing something where you're doing a lot of vegetation, that would be the only time we really downsize my hook size. That's it. So either a number two or a number one.
Pete, what do you have to say about that?
Well, what I have to say is I noticed one of the top finishers on the Oneida tournament was using the new VMC flash trebles. Did you notice that? One that won the ICAST Best in Show terminal tackle.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah, he had his jerkbait rigged, all three hooks.
Mm-hmm. What?
With one of those.
All three hooks?
All three of them had the blade on it. And what do they call it? The bladed treble? I have to look up the name of that hook, but it's brand new. I think it's not even got
Ike's picture on it.
Yeah, I'm not even quite used to the name of it yet. It's so new.
Yeah.
But they're, you know, he was able to trigger strikes using that new tool to trick out his jerkbait. So
really?
that was pretty awesome to see.
I wonder how much weight that adds.
I'm sure it adds weight, but man, it probably adds a lot of noise.
A lot of flash, a lot of noise.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know about that much weight because it's such a small blade, you know, but... Well, it's neat to see somebody putting that to work and big time putting it to work, not just catching some fish with it, but actually, you know, crushing a top finish in the Derby using it.
Yeah, that's major. I mean, obviously, if he got top finish, it worked.
Yep.
You know.
Yep.
I would think it would add noise.
Oh, it's got to.
Oh yeah. I just saw a video of
the crankbait.
The crankbait, Nishine's crankbait that has the blade on it.
Blade on the front.
Spinner blade on the front. Treble.
Mm-hmm. It clacks and flashes. It does both.
It clacks and flashes. It gets the crankbait to run erratic.
Mm-hmm.
It hunts a little bit more. But what definitely caught my attention was the added noise.
Yeah.
You know, it is a bigger blade, certainly, but the added noise from that thing flacking around and hitting the body.
I wonder how the guy fished it, if he fished it, like I'm saying. Like when I jerkbait fish a lot, when I'm on a jerkbait bite, 9 times out of 10, man, I'm jerking it so freaking hard, it's like, it's almost coming out of water sometimes.
Yeah.
That's how hard I usually work the jerkbait. Like I said, it's, you know, the fall especially, they're looking for the bait. I mean, they're looking up, you know, mm-hmm. that jerkbait's going, they're coming to get it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same as a cat with a freaking laser. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, they just can't take it.
And we got on, I know when the boys from Bash U, Justin Kimmel was there and Ike and me, we were staying at the same house. We were on that pattern on the jerkbait where you were ripping it as fast as you could rip it. incredibly hard on your joints after a few hours of doing it.
Real hard.
Man, your hands, your elbow, all these muscles in your arm you didn't even know you had are aching and dying from it. But that's what you had to do in order to trigger the bites that week, you know. Yep. But great question. Hooks on
some bigger
hooks on the jerk bait, and it, you know, the only thing that I will say is you got to, when it comes to suspending, because there's times when you got to let it suspend. But here we're talking about the fall. But when you got to look at what those, and you mentioned it, Brian, are those hooks making that bait sink, or making it float if you downsize? So you just got to be aware of what your baits are doing, especially if the pause is an important part of your retrieve in colder water.
Yeah, colder later in the year.
Yeah.
When the longer the pause really matters.
Right. And sometimes you want it to sink. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you like for it to get down. Sometimes you want it to slowly rise. And the hooks can really change that action on the ball.
Yeah.
What else you got, Riz?
Question from Travis Gasper. What is the most underrated bait or technique for fall fishing?
I got it.
Go ahead, Pete.
I got this. The most underrated, and one of these years, I am going to win a tournament on it. It's probably going to be another 100 years before it happens. But I'm running out of time.
Bladed Black Senko.
Yeah, the bladed Black Senko. The Silver Buddy style bait. The Silver Buddy style bait is a bait I love to fish in the cool water. When the water, it doesn't even have to be cold, like especially for smallmouth. Once you get these first fronts come through, they start snapping on it. When the water's warm, it's weird. They don't hit it as well. But when you start getting that water temperature dropping a little bit, the smallmouth just start tearing it up. The largemouth start tearing it up, and it is not thrown. It is not, you know. It's just an underutilized tool, and, you know, I love it. This is the time. It's the fall. It's the time of year to use it. So that's my number one choice in the most underutilized bait. You got one?
Well, can I add to something with that?
Sure, yes,
please. So when I'm on a NIDA, this is where I picked up on this at, when I'm on a NIDA lake and they're schooling like that and they're far away, I usually have a blade bait tied on because I can throw that thing a mile.
Yep.
Plus, it's something that gets there and it goes right down. If they see a thing fall and go down, to eat it really quick. You know, I learned how to blade bait fish probably the same place, the Upper Bay. I mean, it's great there.
Yep.
But yeah, that's definitely an overlooked bait, you know.
Have you tried the spin bait for those schoolers?
Spin bait, which one?
Spy bait.
The spy bait, yeah. Yeah, I definitely have spy baited myself. But for some reason to me, man.
You can cast that thing a mile.
You can. For some reason for me, I don't know why, but the spy bait for me, not so much with schoolers, only plays a role at certain times. And I really can't say when it plays a role. It's like I pick it up and I can't get bit on anything else, and then I get bit on that.
Mm-hmm.
The spy bait is definitely a special bait.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I'll be honest, I never threw it at a group of schoolers yet.
It's some of the only success I've had with it.
Is that right?
When they're popping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just let it fall right in there.
Mm-hmm. It makes it, you know, there's so many tools that,
there is.
You know, when they're popping, they're aggressive, you know. Their dorsal fin's going, everything's going. That's a great time, you know, to see when a bait like that would work, you know. I'd like to, but how often does it happen, you know, for, you know.
South Jersey?
Yeah.
Not too often.
Yeah, it's a rare scenario where you're getting around schoolers. I got around them at Oneida once, and I'll tell this story because it's kind of a quirky story, but my co-angler actually had found a spot that he wanted to fish, and, you know, I wasn't doing well in that derby, so we went there, and you know, I'm like, dude, I'm out, what do you got?
Your boat.
Yeah. So we go there, and it's a real shallow flat, and the fish were coming up on it, or they came up one time for us, and
I love that spot.
And with a spook, you know, that was my first choice because that's what I had a big super spook tied on, and I fired it out there, and they would not hit it. I mean, these fish are blowing perch out of the water, and you know, there was 10 or a dozen of them, and they wouldn't, they let that bait go right through the boils and wouldn't
swim
hit it.
Bait.
And then, so I come into the boat with it, and I get halfway in, and I just reel it in as fast as I can because I'm going to get the next one. And here they all come with it. Yeah. They're all, and I took it out of the water, and I grabbed a Black Senko, and I threw it in there. and did the, just one grabs it and swims off, and I set the hook and missed them, and it threw back in there. Now the worm's all boogered up on the hook now. Oh, and I just threw it back in there anyway, because and fish grabs it, missed them, and I grab a tube. Meanwhile, my partner's
probably disgusted with it, but yeah.
Yeah, my partner throws a tube in. He's got one hooked up. I grab my tube rod, which because of my Senko is now gone. It's only a little piece of plastic left on the hook, and I throw the tube in there. Boom! First cast, get, and he come. I missed three in a row.
Oh, man.
on those schoolers. But
that's when I quit fishing.
Yeah, but it was like, you know. But the good news is I went up to the docks in that area and caught almost 14 pounds of fish. You know,
day one.
Yep. And so that was a good save. But it would have been nice to have a couple 4 pound smallmouth in the box. You know. Yeah. But that was awesome to be around the schoolies. I love fishing around, schooling fish, schooling smallmouth. It doesn't happen near enough. You know,
yeah,
it's so much fun. But when you get around those groups of fish, it's a good time to try those baits. I've never thrown a spy bait on them yet, but I will.
Swim bait, I think, is one of the best on the schoolers. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I tell you about, if you got schoolers and you're throwing a swim bait, the best thing to do is cast that swim bait and let it just fall on a slack line.
Mm.
Boom, they'll eat it every time.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm. Yep, that's good advice. It's good advice. I mean, it's hard to practice with schoolers, right? Because they don't come up that much, so you don't know what to throw at them all the time.
Well, so for me on Oneida, and Greg kind of tapped on this, how Oneida's evolving with the gobies. So the old Oneida, I'll call it, I've spent one tournament in particular. It was a Bass Open. I spent my entire 2 days schooling fish. I never left them.
Right.
I just marked schools down. And I ran school to school to school. I had a pretty good finish doing it.
Yep. Yeah, that's how it was won. I remember Randy Howe won a tournament up there chasing schoolies years and years ago.
And Boy Duckett, I think.
Yeah, that's right. He used the swim bait.
Yep. Yeah, he did.
On super light line.
Yep.
That was a key.
What, 6 pound?
I think so. He was saying he was using lighter line than everybody around him, and that's why he thought he won, because he was fishing in a crowd around a big group of schoolers.
Yep.
What's next on the agenda, Riz? Great question.
Gary Ring would like to know, on behalf of his son, he has a high school age son who's pursuing fishing. What's the number one piece of advice that you both could give to a young angler?
Fish your butt off. That's my best advice. I mean, just don't stop fishing. For me, man, I would work. You know, right out of high school, I worked. Even in high school, I'd leave high school, I'd go fishing. I work full day, I go fishing. Mm-hmm. For me, it was all about just fishing.
Yeah.
That's my biggest thing. The sponsors will come.
And I think that's excellent advice. And the one thing that I want to add to that is, you know, especially a young angler that, you know, might need to wait for his dad to get in the boat or an uncle or whoever he's going fishing with. But I just want to emphasize that you can learn so much at your local pond, at your local creek. You don't necessarily have to be out in that boat to be able to learn how to throw a chatterbait, learn how to get bites on a shaky head. Learn how to, you know, fish a topwater. You can do that at a little tiny farm pond.
Absolutely.
And that is an amazing training ground. You can do that before school, after school, you know, during the summer. You know, if you can get access to that stuff, you know, which is a lot easier. It, in other words, you don't have to go out in a $70,000 boat to learn how to do this sport.
Mm-hmm. No, not at all.
Yeah.
I mean, look what I came from.
Yep.
Yeah, he won his first Pro-Am on Lake Norman and won his first bass boat. Never being in a bass boat,
right?
I mean, we started our club in 12-foot Coleman crawdads,
yeah,
and that was our bass club. Mm-hmm. And we competed on these 60-70-100 acre lakes,
mm-hmm.
and learned all the tools and techniques
to where he was
able
to
get, yeah,
mm-hmm.
to where he was able to get in the back of a boat fishing a Pro-Am,
mm-hmm.
Bassmaster Pro-Am, and you know, and won his first bass boat that way. But yeah, you don't. Yeah, I see like the high school, some of the high school angling where they're all in bass boats and they've got captains and boat captains and they're all on the same big bodies of water. That's cool, but it doesn't have to be that way.
No, not at all.
Not at all.
And I get a lot of, you know, adults that come out for training and, you know, through the Bass University. And that's something that I tell them too. It's not just kids. Like guys, you know, get in their boat and they're distracted because they got to launch and there's pressure. Mm-hmm. You know, especially if you're new to bass fishing, mm-hmm. you got your sonar, you're trying to figure out how the sonar works and, you know, all this other stuff, but you haven't you're not confident in fishing a jig yet.
Yeah,
you got take your jig down to the local pond and get 20 or 30 bites before work at your lunch break.
Yep.
You know, and you can do that as kids too. It's like getting the bites, getting confident in those tools. Because once you know, a bite in a farm pond is the same as a bite in a river, same as a bite in a big old lake. It's all the same.
Yep.
But you need to get confident in those techniques. So just, that's all I'm saying. You don't think you need a giant boat to get out there and get better at this sport. We got tons of stuff to help you, obviously, at Bass University. And you can take a technique. You can learn from Greg Hackney about how to fish a jig. And then you can go out and implement that on your pond or wherever you go.
Yep.
And you can, you know, and that's another thing that I think is a great tool is especially when you're learning in your early development, is to take a single bait with you. I know Mike said he would take a single bait, like learn it over the summer or something like that. But you could take a single bait down to the pond, like a jig. Don't bring anything else.
Right.
Because you'll go back, because Brian always falls back to his Black Senko.
Right.
You know, if he has it, he's going to throw it. He won't throw the jig. He won't throw the spinnerbait. So,
but you're spot on, Pete. And we used to do that. You know, there would be certain bodies of water around here that are all laydowns. And I remember back in the day, just go out and just be like, I'm just going to throw a jig today.
Right.
And it might not have been the best bait for then. You know, if it was a tournament scenario, that's a losing strategy. But
to learn that bait, you learn how it feels in the mud.
Yep.
You learn how it feels in the rock. You learn how to get it through grass, how to work it through a treetop.
Yep.
You learn what that bite feels like. And that's, to me, one of the most important things is
learn how to get,
what is a bite? How do they respond to that? That, you know, is it a tick or this, is it mush? Like, you hear people talk about it feels like a wet sponge when you got a fish on, you know, but you got to experience that for the first time to know what they're talking about.
And
you
then
know?
Perfect it.
And then perfect. And then when you're out there and the wind's blowing and the waves and the current and you got that wet sponge, you're like, I know what to do.
Yep.
I know what that is.
You set the hook
You set the hook instantly.
Without the big.
Yeah. Is that him? Is he there? Yeah. Is that grass? Is that wood?
It's already over.
You know, you know what to do. Set the hook.
On
with a cash and rod, like Riz does.
Yep, that's right.
Big pool cue.
Fishing a chatterbait, yeah. 7'4". F9047B.
great question, Gary. Good luck to your son in his development. What else we got?
New York Chris chiming in on the message board. Yo, Chris.
What's up, Chris?
He wants to know.
Happy anniversary, Chris.
No. New York Chris would like to know, fishing in the fall and you have up and down water temps. If you're fishing for suspended fish over humps, what's the first bait you guys are picking up?
It's a wide variety. I mean, it can use a lot of things, but like I said, man, I keep going back to it because it's so versatile. It really is a swim bait. It's just, you know, especially if it's small,
that's the swim bait.
Too. Yeah, you'll just pull a whole school up.
Suspended fish over humps in the fall. Well, I could tell you back when in Lake Sebago, we dropped pumpkin with chartreuse tail lizards, 6-inch lizards to win the tournament.
Try that today.
Fishing on the humps.
They still make them?
Try that today.
Wow.
That was talking about
it
old
sounds
school.
Like it's really tough up there.
Yeah, it Keith's is about to weigh in. He has one fish.
Is he really?
God.
Well, that could be good today.
I'm telling you, well, I'm glad he's weighing in fish. We talked about this.
Why did they go to the worst lake in Maine?
That's a good question. Because most lakes are really on fire right now, and Cabo San Conte is a great lake. It's got big fish in it.
I ate there the other day.
You did?
Yeah.
They're the two big bodies of water in Maine that I think you can have a tournament on, so they had to pick one or the other. You know, and unfortunately, Sebago is on a downturn at the moment, I guess.
Wow.
That's unfortunate. But one fish, when you're fishing those team tournaments, it's long. Everybody's got to catch them. Just don't zero, and your team can win that tournament, win the boat, win the big prize.
Yeah.
So hopefully they all catch them up there.
Yeah, Jesse McGee, you better smash them.
Yeah. But suspended fish over humps, you know, swim bait is a great choice. In the fall, jerk bait. You know, to me, there's always a magic button, and I missed the magic button at Lake Oneida, and it seemed like it was that chatterbait, that perch-colored chatterbait was a really big deal, and I did not get that, and I know that to be a deal, you know? But there's always one thing that those fish will have an affinity for day-to-day.
Yes.
over another thing.
Agreed.
One day it'll be a jerk bait. One day it'll be a swim bait. It'll be a topwater. There'll be something that they'll really respond to. And one of the ways that I usually find it is that the fish respond to the perch, the bait responds to it. Like if it's the shad will follow your spinner bait all in, yep. And you're like, oh,
that's true.
You know, and then the spinner bait will be the one that they want, or the jerk bait, you'll pull a school of perch up with it, or a swim bait will pull the bait up. The bait, it's weird like that, but I've seen the bait give it away before the bass give it away sometimes, yep. You know, except on Lake Oneida. Hmm. Well, what else you got, Rich? Great question. New York Chris.
Yes, New York Chris, you are going to win a Gen 2 coal system.
Yes.
Ooh, that's an awesome prize.
New York Chris, you're living in New York, man. It's the greatest state, except for Oneida, to fish in the entire planet. It really is.
Hey, Pete.
Yeah.
After Ike Live the other night, we put a post-show social post up, and the question was, how many times was Black Senko mentioned in last night's show? We went off.
Yeah. Comments went wild.
Yeah.
Did you get a hard number on it?
Not yet. Yeah. Yeah. We haven't announced the winners yet because we're waiting for our show to go up on the archives on the website, but we will be announcing the winner of that. And we're going to pick one winner from Facebook and one winner from Instagram.
So. Maybe we'll do that for our Fast U podcast when that's up. How many times did Pete denounce
Oneida? Oh my lord. Jeez. It's counting. It's not over yet. I know. We got a few more references left.
Next question we got for you guys is from Gary Gigieri. When you're fishing a chatterbait ingrass, which do you prefer? Mono, fluoro, or braid?
That's a great question. We don't talk about lines much with chatterbaits anymore because everybody seems to have migrated to fluorocarbon.
Yeah, but I mean, I think we've had this question before when I was here. I have a rule of thumb for this. So my rule of thumb when fishing grass, how do I choose? I never throw mono first off on a chatterbait. I just don't. Just too much stretch. Just not a good hookup. Kind of like what Dean had a problem with on them long casts. Even a super long cast with fluoro sometimes, you know, can be sticky if your rod's not strong enough. But my rule of thumb is either braid or fluoro. If I can't get my chatterbait through the grass properly, I throw braid. Then I got plenty of ripping power to knock that old grass off. It's getting stuck on the chatterbait. That's when I throw the braid.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And the problem is when the grass gets real thick, you gotta rip so hard to get that chatterbait through with fluoro even. Mm-hmm. Not because I don't use mono for that application at all, but with fluoro, even you got to rip so hard you pull it outside of the fish's strike zone. By the time it frees up from the grass, when it gets that thick, I go to braid and just with a simple pop you can clear it. The only difference I do and I use braid, but I use a leader. I'll put a 4 or 5 foot fluorocarbon leader on the end of braid and it accomplishes the same thing, but I just do that.
What pound test?
Usually 20. 20, right. Yeah. And when I'm throwing fluoro, I'm usually throwing 20 pound. Sometimes I'll go down to 16.
What knot are you connecting the two lines with?
Pete's knot. Okay. It's actually Albright knot. I use the Albright knot, and I put crazy glue on it.
Oh, you do?
I can tie it in 15 seconds.
Really?
Yeah. So, and it's 100% for me. So I think the FG knot's a better knot overall, but it takes some, you know, three arms and a week to tie it.
Go in a little bit more about line size when you're fishing the fluorocarbon, because I've noticed a lot this year specifically.
Downsizing.
Yeah, where I'd be fishing with guys and I'm fishing 15 pound fluoro, and it's been other people on the boat with me too, and that 15 pound line seems to outperform the other. So talk about why, where, when, what makes you decide to go up or down.
That's a great point. You want to tackle it?
I have experienced this a million times. So basically,
paybacks.
Basically, for me, I'm always going to start with 20 every time, just because of power reasons, you know, of abrasion resistance, all that good stuff. But there's been a lot of times where in either a pressure situation or even like pre-spawn, it seems to be a lot too, where if I go down to a 15 pound test, not only does it allow my chatterbait to go a little bit deeper, It allows my chatterbait to have a lot more erratic action, but it gets a lot more bites a lot of different times. 15 seems to be the benchmark to where I go to. It's either 15 or 20. It's never down to 12 or nothing, but it can make a huge difference. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that comes with vibration, right? The thinner line is probably giving you more vibration, which is making it sound differently than Brian's bait that's not vibrating it at all. It's just,
but I think it can go both ways too, Pete, because I think with the 20, sometimes you want to be quieter.
Yeah.
And, you know, the good thing about 20-pound test, in my opinion, you really can slow that bait down because you got all that line drag.
Mm-hmm.
And you can have it in the strike zone a lot longer just because of the thicker line.
That's an excellent point. And the trailer affects the vibration, right? It definitely affects the vibration. What else affects the vibration is the bait. Like you have the standard chatterbait and you have the weedless chatterbait.
Mm-hmm.
You have the jackhammer and you have 15 other types of baits that you can throw. And man, I was doing some testing on chatterbaits in my pool this summer, and it was absolutely amazing.
It is amazing.
The difference in vibration coming out of those different baits, the different ways they act, different trailers make them do different things. So there's a lot to learn. So the reality of it is, if a guy's getting bit and you're not fishing a similar bait, same trailer, same bait, you got to look at what's different. Either he's using a different technique, retrieve of some sort, or he's just more talented than you.
or he didn't work the entire summer because he was on that same spot. Whatever.
It's getting a different vibration. The fisher. What'd you say?
This is one of those like buyer's remorse topics where I almost wish I didn't bring it up so that I could have just kept it in my pocket, you know?
I think line size is more important a lot of times. It's more important than a trailer, actually.
Really? That might be true. Yeah. I don't know. I don't think I disagree with that. I think the bait is the most important, like which jig you're picking.
Yeah, no doubt.
Because if you want, I'm telling you right now, the jackhammer vibrates more than the chatterbait does.
The jackhammer sounds like a chatterbait. It's so much louder.
Yeah, it's really, it really hits your rod tip and you can see it in the water.
John Cox doesn't throw the jackhammer.
And I think a lot of guys don't. I really don't. Right.
I'm just saying, it gets more vibration isn't always better.
Right, and it's one of those things that'll be kind of cyclic. It's everybody's throwing the jackhammer, there's going to be the fish get conditioned. They get pummeled because some people are out there 6 days a week instead of selling houses.
Yeah.
So
what is the bait that Eric the intern uses?
A Finch Nasty Thumper.
Now, the Finch Nasty Thumper in the pool was really interesting because I had my son in the
pool. Did you throw it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
I had my son in the pool and he was, he was going up and
the
trying to listen.
The barb on the hook isn't that good.
Trying to listen to him. I was able to hook him a couple times and, behind you. But he would go up and listen and I'd run him by him underwater and he would tell me what he saw and what he heard.
Oh, cool.
And it was very cool because he was into it and I thought this is a great way to test
interact with your son.
Yeah. So he comes up and after we got back from the hospital,
you got those six hooks out of
them. They got a hell of a barb.
Yeah, Dad, the jackhammer's got a much bigger barb. That really hurt, that one.
Yeah. She was.
But no, the Finch Nasty Thumper. Master Thumper, whatever it's called.
Finch Nasty. Finch Nasty.
He's like, Dad, this one sounds really weird. It goes, grr, grr, grr. And it's all erratic. And that's like the word that he used.
Yeah.
It doesn't even give you a steady.
It hunts like crazy.
And you can see it in the water hunting, but it's like it sounds erratic. Like it's giving off an erratic. Grr, grr, grr. It's really unique.
Yeah. So Eric would go out and fish it in a little quarry around here.
Mm-hmm.
Open water, open, deer, clear, 18 feet, wide open, clear water, and catch them on it.
Yep.
Yeah. It's like, chatterbait's generally a grass bait. It's where it's, most effective. But, and it's all about how erratic that thing is. And people say that a jackhammer's erratic. No, the hell it ain't. I mean, the jackhammer's true as hell. You want to make it erratic?
Yeah.
You pulse your rod. Yeah. But that thing, the Finch Nasty, that bait is all over. It legit, it's over here, it's over there, it stops for a second, it's back in. it's all over. It really is. And in open water scenario, it catches them. Lee Livesey's with Finch Nasty.
Well,
we talked to him about it at ICAST.
The other bait we got at the ICAST was, what was that, a jackal or?
What was brake blade.
A brake blade?
Yeah, you're not allowed to get them in this country, so we didn't get them.
We didn't get them. Yeah. But with silent, does not make noise.
Oh.
Right? It's amazing, you know, what you can, there's so many different ones.
There is a lot.
And there's ones that have the split ring in it, the Finch Nasty does.
It does.
And some of them make noise, some of them don't make noise, but I've dialed mine in a little bit, so I know which ones are the big vibrators, which ones are the silent ones, which ones, you know, make the erratic noise. And now I've got, you know, if I can ever figure out to throw a perch one on Oneida, I might get a bite, you know. But
there's always next time.
Yeah, but I've got you know, I don't think we did. He did say what chatterbait he threw, and it wasn't a jackhammer or a Z-Man.
It is a jackhammer.
It is a jackhammer?
He said the color. Okay. The jackhammer.
Gotcha.
And I don't want to repeat it, really.
Words.
No, I have to. It's the Heights. It's the Heights. Heights Delight. B Heights Delight.
Yep.
And it's a. Yeah, it's
chartreuse bottom, green pumpkin top is what it looked like to me.
That's what it is.
Yeah, and
gold
it's,
blade.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a killer.
Yep. They show it. They show it on Bassmaster. So
he's ready to quit just because he had to give that up.
Anyways, we went off on vibration.
Yeah.
What else you got?
Back.
What else you got, Riz? Let's give away some more prizes. We got to get rid of this stuff. Let's shotgun them. Let's get them out the door.
When do you guys prefer a swim jig over a swim bait?
Absolutely, this is the most important question. You throw the swim jig when they're biting a swim jig better, and you throw a chatterbait when they're biting a chatterbait better.
And next swim bait.
What's that?
It was swim bait or swim jig.
Well, same thing applies. But do you have a concept on this?
I do. So this applies especially in grass fishing. So the swim jig gets the job done 95% of the time in grass. When you get later in the season and it's very pressured and you need to be subtle, that's when that swim bait comes in for me personally. But the swim jig, man, it's like basically pre-spawn all the way into post-spawn is when it shines. And then it's like I start picking the swim bait up on the, like, you know, on the flat or something like that. That's for me, that's when it's the best.
Yeah, that's a great deal. And man, it's so hard because I've done well in both situations, and I have them, you know, I don't really have a process on how to pick one of those other than I fish them both in the same type of place, and I let the fish tell me which one that they want better because I can't decide. And I add the chatterbait into that too because you got to put that in the mix, and a spinnerbait. There are four baits in that category that can be fished around grass, fished around habitat, and, you know, how do you pick one over the other? You know, I like to throw the spinner bait when there's a lot of bait fish around, and especially the sunshine. There's flash, you know, and the rest is empirical. You know, like you're making it up. You're letting the fish tell me what to do. So that's how I decide. Is I keep it a little bit more simple for my own fishing. But they're excellent tools. You know, got to buy two rods.
Yeah, you know, to add to what I said a little bit ago too. You know, I said with the chatterbait for me. I basically throw one trail on my chatterbait. I throw a Zaco. That's basically what I always throw. But with my swim jig, it's either a swim bait or some kind of creature. It's either one or the other, and that's where the fish tell me.
Right, okay.
That's the only trail I mix up on them moving baits. So my swim jig is the one that I change up on.
Awesome. Swim jig's a big one.
Huge.
It's a big bait. You need to be throwing it. There's times when you can't pitch and flip them. You got to actually swim that jig to get him to bite. Great question. We'll throw you something.
Love to hear Greg talk a little bit more about the St. Lawrence. We never really got into that earlier.
We talked about it a little bit. Let's talk about it now.
Yeah.
The one thing I liked about it was, man, I love seeing you throw that Carolina rig for smallmouth. It's such a great weapon. It is one turn. It won at Lake Oneida one year, the Carolina rig.
I believe it.
Won for smallmouth.
Dude, for smallmouth, I feel like it's just such an underrated bait technique that just kills it.
Yep.
So good. They can't resist it, man. Like I said on live, for me, with the C-Rig, when that wind's blowing, there ain't much things that can compared to it.
Yeah,
especially getting down there and covering water. Yeah. Tell me about the rig itself, you know. How heavy your weight, tungsten weight, you know, your main line, your leader line,
so
the whole setup.
Yeah, so I don't, you know, I generally don't go crazy with weights. I mean, I throw a tungsten weight, I throw a 1 ounce on the St. Lawrence just because there's a tremendous amount of current.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I can tell you that I learned on the St. Lawrence, you have to, period, no matter if you're throwing a Carolina rig or this little jig that I was throwing. If you didn't have bottom contact, man, you weren't getting them.
Yeah.
You know, I had that Carolina rig down there just knocking like crazy. I'll give you guys a little secret that I actually do with my Carolina rig, and I think it makes a big difference because I fished around, not in this tournament, other tournaments where people were throwing the Carolina rig, and they weren't getting them, and I was getting them. We were throwing the same bait. One thing that I actually do, don't share this anyway. One thing I actually do is I throw a oversized swivel, oversized, big time. It's actually a saltwater one. If you grab my swivel and you just shake it, it's mm-hmm. so loud, it's tremendous.
Really?
Yes, it's crazy loud. So that? Between the glass bead, the 1 ounce tungsten, and that swivel, okay. It's a lot louder than anything
braid,
else.
Is your braid your main line?
No, I use, generally if I can, I just go to 20-pound main line down to a 15. I use 100% fluorocarbon.
Now, I know they're notorious for zebra mussels, and you didn't used to be the case. You never had to worry about it, but the Carolina rig, it's taking that 1 ounce weight, and it's getting your line right in around those zebras. Did you have any break-offs? Did you have any trouble with abrasion?
So, no. Well, so if you watched live, I retied like crazy. Yeah. I didn't even, like, if I did a full drag, and like I say, I didn't get a bite, when I pulled it back in, I retied.
Yeah.
I didn't even. Yes, because the whole bottom there is all, you can look down in the water, and it's all zebra mussels, the whole thing, mm-hmm. literally.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean,
not every cast,
I was doing drag. So if I throw a cast out, a drag might be like, you know, 200-300 feet.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, if I felt like I was, got like hung up a little bit and I had to pop it off, I would reel back in and just retie. Because I wasn't taking any chances. A lot of times it was there was a small.
Retying the whole rig or just the
front knot?
The front knot on the swivel most of the time. Now I do put a bobber stop on my Carolina rig also. So go back into my rig style. So the first thing I'll do, you know, I take my 15-pound fluoro, I tie it to the swivel on one end, I tie it to the hook on the other end. I have that, you know, leader length depends basically however you want to do it. It just depends on your own personal preference. But when I go to retie, so my main line, I put a bobber stop up, I put a 1 ounce weight, I put my glass bead, I was throwing a black glass bead actually, and then I put another bobber stop. So the bobber stop actually, if you think about it, when that weight's dragging, that bobber stop's in front of the weight, so you got a little bit of rubber there to protect it a hair. So that's why I did a bobber stop in the front. And the other spot that always gets nicked is usually the knot. So I got a bobber stop in front of that knot too. So I got two bobber stops just kind of for more protection.
Interesting.
That's why I do that.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. I've been out dragging, and Brian, the zebras, you're so bad. Oh, you're drifting, and you're bubble, 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 toom, and it's gone.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't even hang up.
Yep.
And the zebras cut the line.
They're crazy. It's like a pickerel, just that their mouth wide open.
Yeah, do you prefer that 20-pound fluoro over a heavy braid for the zebra mussels?
The braid's no good on that kind of stuff, I don't think, because it's just, the braid's a nylon. If it hits anything sharp, it just rips it and cuts it like nothing.
Yeah.
You know, your braid, if you do braid, I have Carolina rig with braid before on lakes that, you know, just want to get super far cast out there.
Yeah, I've done it on Champlain, and
you've
got some zebra mussels, probably not like what you're doing.
Nah, this is like, I mean, it's a mat down there of them.
Yeah.
That's all you can see. You can look down and just see them.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. But you guys saw me talk about it. This hook right here for Carolina rigging, if you guys want to put this in the camera, this is the hook. I'll pull one out. This is the one I kept talking about on live. It's unbelievably sturdy, and it's got a really good barb on it. So when I was, you know, banging them big smallies, nothing came off.
Yeah.
You know, I was laying in some hard as I could, too.
That's a nice hook. That's it's got a little bit of it's not a 90-degree bend here. It's more than that to add as a little help on the keeper.
Yep. Yeah, it's your Hayabusa. It's your, you know, offset worm hook.
Yep. What was the bait of choice?
So the bait was this right here. Just a creature style. It's called a Little Fuzzy from Riot.
Okay.
There was two different colors I was throwing, but, you know, the green pumpkin one kind of did most of the damage.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you dip it or stain it?
No, I didn't do anything. You know, I feel like everybody kind of thinks that I caught almost all the fish on a Carolina rig, but day one, 23.6 was weight on this jig. Every single fish I caught day one was on this. And so day two, I was telling Riz this before we got here. Day two, I pulled up on the very first spot. I threw a jig out there. I hooked up at one, like my first cast, and I lost it.
Right.
Then the wind started blowing, and I automatically thought Carolina rig, and I picked the Carolina rig up, and I didn't put it down until day four, basically. And then I caught another really big one on the jig day four. But the jig for me is, man, Oneida, Champlain, up there now, Erie. It's just a great bait. And one other thing that I think that's helping the jig bite on them bodies of water is the goby, because now I got crayfish and I got goby.
Yep.
So you got this bumping around down there. It just imitates both of them now.
Yeah. That's a riot jig.
Yeah, it's called Little Creeper.
Yeah, super fine hair.
Yeah, so when it comes to the jig on the St. Lawrence, I'm going to tell you guys a little secret if you guys are going up to that St. Lawrence that I figured out. And Pete, you probably actually know this. So all the years, I spent a lot of time on Lake Erie. And one of the things on Lake Erie that's really, really big is dragging a tube. One thing that I noticed about Lake Erie, if you're around that 0.9 or 1 mile an hour on the jig, on the tube when you're dragging it, don't get hooked. When you're dragging on Lake Erie, there seems to be, like, in my opinion, you have current out there, you got wind currents, you got a lot of different currents. You need to be around a certain speed.
Mm-hmm.
And the speed really can dictate how many bites you get, because it's just a natural current speed that you're pulling that bait. Well, when I got up to the St. Lawrence and I saw the current, the first day I was there, there was no wind. I put the boat in, I let the boat just drift. And I noticed, okay, the current on this body of water is about 1.5, 1.6. That's the current speed, which means if there's any kind of bait down in the bottom, that's how fast they're going down the river.
Right.
So day one of the event, we didn't have hardly any wind. The current speed was really easy to do. Day two, like I said, it started to blow first thing in the morning. So when that wind started to blow, my boat started going 2 mile an hour. But the current underneath me was still the same speed. It was 1.5, 1.6. Mm-hmm. My boat was going faster because it was kind of a big sail. So I put the boat into the wind, and I kept tapping my trolling motor. To slow myself down, to keep that speed. And I continuously got bit. There was other guys around me. They weren't throwing what I was throwing, but they weren't catching them. They were drifting past me too fast.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just, you know, controlling my speed. Because when you're throwing a half-ounce jig or a big Carolina rig down there with all that weight, it's going to sit there until you pull it.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can control my speed, that was a big part of it.
Right, right.
Yep.
Yeah, that speed of the drift is, I've seen that, you know, over and over again. Drift socks we used to use, drift paddles when you're out in the big lake, you know?
Yep, to control your drift speed.
To slow it down. Yep. And often the guys that can drift slower, you know, catch more, you know, in a lot of situations. And you know what I noticed, and this seemed to be...
putting your poles down.
That helps a lot, too.
Yeah.
Is it all drag? Like, are you hopping at all, or is it just straight
drag?
No,
so when I was in the St. Lawrence or Lake Erie, you basically put your rod, you cast out there, and you just hold it. Yeah. And you're just dragging it or everything. You're not pulling it.
Are there situations where you would hop it?
At the St. Lawrence, I had none. The only time you saw me pop it is when I got, like, stuck a little bit in the zero muscles, and I'd pop it out. And a lot of times I'd reel it back in, there'd be a zero muscle on the actual hook itself.
Hmm.
You know, where I snagged them a little bit. But as far as that jig goes, and I picked up on this, you know, pretty quick on the St. Lawrence because of, obviously, you know, I knew I needed bottom contact. I retied that jig, I would probably say, at least 150 times in them 4 days. I mean, I had a callus on my finger from the time. Because I was fishing a bunch of, you know, high spots to low spots. When I'd come off of them high spots and start drifting, I was losing bottom contact. So I went down to a 12-pound fluorocarbon.
Mm-hmm.
The 12-pound allowed me to basically keep that jig on the bottom, and it never came off no matter how deep I got.
Okay.
Because I was throwing 15 originally, and it was just a little bit too much. I was getting too much of a belly in my line. Because of all the current was pulling a little bit. So going down to lighter line made a big, big difference too for me.
Wow. Well, you know, the thing that I noticed about watching that tournament is it was a movement away from vertical fishing.
Yes.
A lot of guys like you were Carolina rigging and dragging, and back the way that we all used to do it, you're getting your baits out away from the boat.
So
a lot of guys were doing that.
Yeah. So, you know, one thing that I can stress too, and I learned on Lake Erie also, it's just funny how you learn stuff and you can kind of, you know, relay it to different places. So I would throw, so basically I was throwing probably 50 feet behind. If I'm dragging, like, where my front of my boat's going with the current, I would throw probably 50 feet behind the boat. And then if you figure I was in 20 to 30 feet, so I only had about 20 feet behind the boat. And the reason I did that was because with fluorocarbon, the way it sinks, if I did a really, really far cast and I had a really big belly in the line, I would get hung up and snagged.
Right.
You know, so if I kept my line a little bit straighter, mm-hmm. I can keep that bait, just keep on going with it.
Yeah.
So that made a difference. So just a lot of little tiny things made a good tournament.
Yeah, the more line you have out, the more you're going to hang up.
Correct. And I caught on that really quick. I was like, I'm not getting stuck in every time. It's every 2 seconds because I'm breaking it off.
Yeah, I know. Well, and we saw Rick Morris do good on the Carolina rig down there.
Yeah, it was last year, right?
Last time you were there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was throwing a lizard, actually.
Is that right?
Yeah, he was.
See that? They should be throwing that lizard up there in Maine.
Rick was actually right by me day one and day two.
Is that right?
Yes, he was.
Right behind you in the standing?
No, right on the side of me fishing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, I don't even know what he even caught.
He didn't do particularly well in that tournament. It was a surprise because using that technique, he did so well.
He didn't throw a big swivel.
Maybe that's it.
Could be. I'm telling you, man, that's a big time secret right there.
Subtle stuff.
I can't believe how stiff that hook is.
Yes, it's a very stout hook.
It's a fairly light wire, razor sharp, but I can't believe how there's no flex in it.
Dude, I'm telling you, that little jig's a bad dude right there.
Yeah, I mean that Hayabusa hook.
That's a sick hook too.
Yeah, my God.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you had a small jig in your hand. A small jig. Okay. Yeah. The Hayabusa hook. I mean, you can't bend it.
No.
Like I was throwing that on a 7'2" heavy, and I put a video
swing
out.
Away. There ain't nothing.
I was hitting them as hard as I could.
Hell yeah.
Yep.
Oh yeah, that hook's retarded.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, this is that jig's. It's candy right there.
Yeah. Those little football jigs and Riot has beefed theirs up. I know Kitech makes one that, you know, has a lighter wire that you know we all been using for years, and Riot, you know, made a hook that's a little bit more powerful.
Yeah, I mean that was the whole, you know, design behind that jig is because a lot of the other jigs out there you can bend the hooks on them. You know, and normally if I'm throwing that like on Oneida, I'll throw that thing on 20-pound test, and I'll just, you know, you don't want with that small jig, you don't want to just set the hook. You want to reel down and just kind of pull into it. The hook's razor sharp.
Yep.
You know.
Yep. Well, you made a choice, and this I want to talk because this is really the premise of the show. But you made a choice on the last day of that tournament.
Yes.
To abandon your smallmouth pattern and go after largemouth. And Thousand Islands is one of those places. It's got a lot of both species, and you made that decision. That must have been a hard decision to make.
It was hard, but it wasn't, because I actually said to myself, if I get in day three, I'm making that run. And, you know, so basically day one, 23, day two, 21, day three, 19 off that smallmouth spot. My bag size was getting smaller and smaller, so I felt like if I was going to gamble, day four was the day to do it. If I'm going to win this thing, I'm going to have to catch, you know, granted, I didn't know Michael was going to catch 25, but I knew I had to catch at least 23. That's how I felt.
Right.
So I made the run, hour and 20 minutes one way. That's how far it was.
Wow.
I mean, it was, there's a slow speed area you got to go through for like 8-9 miles. It's just a big run. So what I fished was a shipwreck.
Mm-hmm.
I got down there. So in practice, when I hit it in practice, like I caught, like, I didn't really, you know, set the hook a lot, but I had some really big larges, and I was like, wow, you know, this is a potential spot to catch over 20 pounds in green ones. So I ran there in a tournament. I caught 3 off of it. I caught a 4.11 and a 4.8, and then I caught like maybe a 2-pounder. I don't know if somebody went there in the tournament or maybe a local hit it during the course of the event, but that's the only 3 bites I got on it.
Wow.
But I still to this day have 0 regrets by doing it, because if I would have won that way, man, it would have been talked about for a long time, I feel like. You know?
Oh, no doubt about it. It was... Now, you went down there. Did you continue largemouth fishing?
No.
Or that was your only spot you ran down there for?
I had other largy spots, but I had never really had the size and practice off of them.
Mm-hmm.
So the gamble was to go there and catch over 20 on green ones.
Right. I mean,
the ship is 120 feet. It's a big boat. It's massive.
How deep was it?
So the tip was in like 29. It was on kind of a hill. And it came up to like 14.
Wow. Oh, man, that's neat. It was awesome to watch it get those first 2 big ones, and I'm like, here we go.
Yep, I thought it was going to happen.
Here we go.
I was shaking, dude. I was like, this is going to happen.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, man.
But then I ran down from there. I had 3 fish in the boat. I ran to my primary spot.
Mm-hmm.
I fished it for probably 2.5-3 hours. I had 1 bite. So I felt like at that time, I was like, maybe I did make the right decision because they just weren't here anymore, and I finally ended up catching like a 4.5. So I'm running back to the ramp. I have no time left. I got 4 fish in the box. I'm running back. I can see the check-in. I got like 2 minutes. This should be maybe on Bassmaster when they air it. So I'm like, I got to stop. I pull the trolling motor. I throw it in the water. My graph goes on, and the whole graph is all fish. And I'm like, no way. I throw the jig down there. boom, right away. I catch it, flip in the boat, throw it in a well, and I just take off and check in. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
That is a cool.
There was a lady on her dock that watched the whole thing go down. She met me at the weigh, and she goes, I saw the whole thing. It's so exciting. It was pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Man, wish you could have stayed for a few more casts. Did you even
see what it was, or just throw it in the box?
It was like a 3-pounder.
Oh, my God.
Smallie.
Man, it would have been nice to be able to jack one there for a little
while. Oh, if I had a new, yeah, I didn't know that was there. I just randomly stopped.
Wow. That's pretty awesome.
As I always saw, as I was running, I saw a little contour butt out. That's all. I'm like, I'm just going to go right there. And I went right to it. And it was loaded with fish.
Man.
Oh, release that's, fish?
Probably. Yep.
About it.
I mean, the whole graph was like, I could have walked across them.
Oh,
yep.
What a place to fish. We need to get up there. We got to have a Bass University outing on Thousand Islands. We're going. We're going to Henderson Harbor. It's closer.
Amen.
It's closer.
Hey, man, shout out to Primal Urge Foods. We've been snacking on some meat sticks during the show today.
And, spicy.
Yeah, that's good stuff, man.
They don't mind.
Sponsor the Ike Live Show, and guys should check them out. Primal Urge Foods. Hey, meat sticks in your mailbox.
Guys, you guys are watching us on Facebook, watching us on our site, wherever you're watching us. Go over and subscribe to Bass U TV if you haven't already done so. I want to invite you to do that. It's our back-to-school special that's going on that ends tomorrow night. It ends. Amazing deal. 30% off ends tomorrow night. So go check it out. And, you know, guys.
That's a yearly subscription?
A yearly subscription is $99 for your first year.
Wow.
Right now. It's a huge back-to-school deal we rolled out for you guys. And a lot of guys are taking advantage of it.
All kinds of secrets in there, man.
If you guys are subscribers, if you haven't done this yet, go do this. Go become a Rapala VIP member. If you haven't done that, you get 30-40% off Rapala, VMC, Storm, Terminator. I can't even all the other products in the Rapala family, including some hunting products and a lot of great stuff that's available for all of our subscribers.
The subscription itself can pay for itself right there.
It pays for itself right there.
Absolutely.
And we got a lot more stuff coming. I also want to invite you guys to go over and check out our store at bassu.tv. We've got hoodies, t-shirts, hats, coffee mugs, socks. It's all available, all socks. Bass University TV goodies.
We got socks. I don't have socks.
I ordered a pair of socks just recently, so I should have mine soon.
Winter's coming. All right.
Winter's coming.
It's time to get yourself geared up. As a matter of fact, right now there's a hoodie sale going on at the Bass University store.
I saw the hoodie. It's a nice hoodie.
It's great stuff that we have over there. We got some cool hats. I want to get them because they're new. They're new designs, and they're available over at bassu.tv. You go there. From there, you can click on our store that's available up on the carousel. What else we got going on at Bass U TV? We're filming with Wesley Strader right now, today.
As we speak.
We are going to be filming on Lake Champlain with Mike Iaconelli and myself coming up in a few weeks. And Brian the Carpenter.
And Riz.
And Riz. And John McGraw.
Riz will be sleeping in the cab of his truck.
Everybody's crashing the banks up there, but we'll be up there real soon. We also are going to be visiting the boys on the West Coast. Before the end of the year, and we have a trip for Lake. It's time Jake just getting off the school bus right now. But speaking of back to school, but we're going to be going out to Clear Lake, and that's on everybody's bucket list.
When is that?
That's going to be in November. We're going to be heading on the West Coast. Yeah, I plan to attend that one.
Going Clear Lake. Back to Cali.
So. We've got a lot more coming on Bass University TV. We're at our classes that are up right now. Early Bird Special available over at thebassuniversity.com. And if you guys, want to go out fishing with one of the pros, we have tons of instructors all over the country. If you want, I mean, the classroom stuff is amazing. But to complement that, we have hands-on training too. And that's available over at thebassuniversity.com. You can fish with me if you're in this area, West Coast. Down in Florida, we've got trainers all over the country, Missouri, and lots of other places, too. So that's all available at Bass University TV. I appreciate all you guys watching tonight. We're going to be sending out a pile of prizes. Are we going to announce the Facebook winner now, or are we going to announce that on social later?
We're going to announce that on
social later.
That is correct.
Thanks for liking and sharing us. Do we have any other business we need to tend to?
Greg
DePalma.
Any news, Greg?
Yeah, I mean, I'm leaving Saturday for Oklahoma, a lake called Ten Killer.
Smallmouth and largemouth.
Smallmouth, largemouth, deep body of water, crystal clear. It's a dive lake.
Really?
Yeah. Yep.
Well, I think those Riot Jigs and that Carolina rig.
They're already tied on. They're already ready to go, man. I got them already rigged up.
Man, well, I wish you the best of luck, you know?
Thank you.
We got to go down there, and then you have the Angler of the Year thing coming up on Lake St. Clair.
Yes, AOI event the following week. That's going to be, that should be a good one, man. That should be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
September up there, it's just everything gets so much fun.
The
summertime, everything gets tight, and the fish get scattered. And it seems like in the fall, everything gets ganged up and grouped up. And
Man,
I hope that happens for you guys.
I think it will. I checked the weather. So Oklahoma is 94 today, and Lake St. Clair is 60. So it's going to be a big-time weather change for us guys. But, man, up there, if it's 60 during the day, it's probably 40, 50 at night. That fish got to be chilling.
Yeah, for sure. Well, wish you the best of luck. How do they follow you?
So you guys can just go on Facebook and Instagram. It's GregDePalma/GDP. Or you can go on Twitter. It's Greg DePalma Fishing. And or website, www.gregdepalma.com.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, we'll be watching. We'll be pulling for you.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Talking. Breaking news, Pete.
We are going to announce the Facebook Like and Share winner. Ooh. We had a change of heart and a change of technology. Come on. Let's learn. The winner of the Facebook Like and Share is Derek Lozier. Congratulations, Derek Lozier. I will contact you via Facebook to acquire your information. Congratulations, buddy.
Awesome. What did they win? Like $900,000 worth of
They won products? Your boat.
A day on the water with Pete and Greg.
Whoa.
TH Marine Gen 2 Cull System and a TH Marine G-Force handle.
Excellent.
Wow.
Excellent. Congratulations. Thanks for being a subscriber to Bass University, or thanks for liking and shares. Hopefully you came over and subscribed to Bass University TV at one of our breaks. And we appreciate all you guys watching. We've got a lot more coming. We're going to be back with you live in October with another great show. We've got a show that we're talking about, and we hope you guys like it. Let us know what you guys want to hear us showcase. But we're going to be talking about the co-angler. On one of our upcoming shows, the how to be a co-angler, how to excel, how to win in that in that role, and things that you can do to outperform in that position. We got a lot of guys. We got professional fish head who works with us here at Bass University.
A friend of Greg's that I'd like to have in studio for that.
Be a good guy for that. Sean McKee.
Sean McKee. He just recently won a boat.
Yep.
As a co-angler.
Yeah. What's he doing with that boat?
He actually traded it in and got a brand new Ranger 520C ordered.
I saw that boat up at Lake Oneida.
Oh, yeah?
He launched a brand new Ranger, looked like a brand new Ranger.
Yeah, he must have picked it up then.
Yeah.
Is he going to start fishing as a boater?
I don't think so, but he's going to probably do stuff around here as a boater, but not on tour.
Is the 520, is that a 21 or?
It's a 20, I believe.
20 and change.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, not quite 21 feet.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's a super nice guy.
Oh, the best.
And he's got a really stout resume from the back deck.
He has an article called From the Back Deck, I believe. He posts. Yep.
Well, he did not so well on the first day of the tournament up at Oneida. I talked to him, but he did what he typically does is he rebounded and had three for almost 10 pounds on day two up at Lake Oneida.
Is it three for the Coes?
Yes. It is
in
three.
Bass now?
That's okay. Right.
Wow.
Yeah, they're only allowed to weigh in three. I hope you didn't crash that boat. Oneida is like a horrible place to take your first boat. I mean, it's just rock, rock, rock everywhere you go. I have two ears on my prop folded over.
you and a lot of guys.
You just can't get it. You try to get to the anywhere, near 5 feet of water, you're going to hit rock.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're going to be talking about the co-angler. So you guys that love that want to do that, want to get better at that, we're gonna be bringing some great content there. I can tell you how a lot of the guys that I've fished with over the years have been real successful, and hopefully can help you be successful.
Yeah, because typically the technique for the back deck is a Senko. How do your co-anglers deal with you throwing it in front of them?
Different color.
Rats. What am I going to do now? They go to a drop shot.
4-inch.
Mid rig.
Well, the cool thing about it, Coes, like my Coes usually clean up when I'm in a smallmouth fishery. And that is such a classic thing.
That's kind of standard though.
Yeah,
smallmouth can play into their favor.
Yeah, it's almost like you can get yourself too target oriented as a pro on smallmouth, where smallmouth are meander a lot in the coves, and a lot of times they're the big ones, you know, that aren't right on the juice. And but anyway, that happens a lot. But there's a lot of, you know, throwing a Senko Carolina rig, fishing areas where, you know, the pro's not fishing. Like one of my coves was real successful in this tournament because I took a period of each day and I went shallow, fishing the bank. Maybe that's why I didn't do so well. I would fish the docks and they would throw out, you know, into what looked like sandbars, but they caught some fish throwing out away from the boat. A lot of cruising smallmouth and largemouth. There's so many ways to be successful and a lot of different strategies. So we're going to dedicate a whole show to it.
I got something to add real quick, and it's about this time of the year. One really cool part about this time of the year, you know, up in this area where we live, is sight fishing. Because the reason these fish do this, so like when you first start getting these cold nights this time of the year, one thing I've noticed a lot of, when you get the cold nights and then during the day when the sun gets up, then fish will, they'll put their backs almost to the top of the surface and you can sight fish them like crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, that's one cool thing about the fall, early fall.
Yep.
So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's just a good little tip. It's, you know, you can get it on the bank. You can get it right up, especially in a creek scenario. Them fish would just hover up high in that water column this time of the year.
That's pretty interesting. And I know, sight fishing is something that, I don't know, it's complicated for a lot of people, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I know I spent some time with John Cox. It seems like that's all he does, you know, is look for fish. I've seen them out on the flats.
Round.
At the Chesapeake?
Oh, yeah.
Out on the grass flats?
Oh, yeah.
I've sight fished them out there.
Oh, I bet.
A lot of times they their fins will give them away.
Yep.
Crazy scenario, but I've seen that before out there. But sight fishing can be a fall pattern, too.
Big time.
Riz, anything, any other housekeeping, BTC?
We outie.
Hey, thanks, everybody. We're going to get all this stuff to you. We gave away, I don't know, $200 worth of stuff. We're glad you guys were here with us on our lunchtime. Let us know if you liked our lunch hour broadcast. We like doing it live at lunch. Let us know if you enjoyed that. Let us know other topics that you want to see coming from Bass University. And look for a lot of great new content constantly coming from us. We're going to be delivering brand new episodes at least twice a week, every week, through the rest of the year, and look for our new classes in the spring.
Wow. So
thanks, everybody. Thanks for being with us. That's GDP, BTC, the Riz. I'm the Dean for Bass University Live. We'll see you next time.
See you guys.
Head over to bassu.tv, the premier learning destination in bass fishing. Over 600 in-depth videos geared to help you catch more and bigger bass. Use the promo code BASSULIVE19 for 10 days free. That's BassU Live 19 to get BassU TV free for 10 days. Get the Bass University Advantage today.